Well, welcome to Running Book Reviews. Liz is the host today, so I'm just doing the preamble. You may have heard our episode on a book called The Boston Marathon Handbook, written by Mike Polina. We've all certainly heard of that book because Liz and I have both read it, and Mark, our guest today again, wrote the darn thing. So there you go. Having said that, we went off and actually did the Boston Marathon, some of us.
Some of us, so, not me so though.
Some of us are going to get interviewed about our Boston Marathon experience, and some of us are going to be the host of the program today. So let me introduce to you your host for tonight, Elizabeth Macrusa.
Hi, guys. So, yeah, all the applause at home. So for today's episode, so normally we just do bonus episodes, Alan and I, but we're really lucky because Mark agreed to come on and talk about his Boston. So we thought that it would be fun. Actually, this was Mark's idea as well. So thanks for that, Mark. It was fantastic. In the Boston Marathon Handbook, there is a pre-race report card. I guess we're doing it post-race. I don't know. There's a report card in the, it's got five sections. So fitness, fueling, physical health, mental health, meteorology, which is basically weather and stuff, I guess. So each of them has graded their experience in Boston. And that's how we're going to talk about it today. So that's going to be really fun.
Aren't you going to ask us all the questions that you sent us earlier that I've spent ages preparing?
You spent ages preparing? Well, you know what? I doubt it.
Okay.
I think you probably spent like the 5 minutes before you logged on preparing your answers for those. But, but I could definitely ask those. I guess we'll do the report card first. And then I'll ask a couple of those. So I guess both of you went to Boston. So let's do the first section, fitness. And I'll start with Alan. Alan, what did you grade your fitness going into Boston?
Yeah, I graded my fitness. I guess we've got school gradings here. So I gave my fitness a B. What I said was, you know, the positive things was a few months back, really before I went off for 2.5 months in Australia, I did a great base building. We had a program with Andrew Snow, and we took his base building advice and started to do a lot of, well, like 100K weeks, I guess we were doing, so 60-mile weeks. We're trying to do them nice and easy with just some sprints in them, sort of strides or hill sprints, and build a big block to then go into our training. So I did that really well. It was the bit afterwards that didn't do so well, which is the actual specific marathon training. Because I was off in Australia having fun, running trails, doing little park runs, 5K races, and a big trail marathon that I did. But that probably helped me a bit. But, you know, the specificity and the fewer long runs in the block kind of worked against me. So I give myself a B overall.
Okay, so Mark, while Alan was off slacking in Australia, what did you do some proper training before Boston? How'd your training go?
Great question. So yeah, you know, mine was interesting. I have to weigh my grade against my A, which my A for sure is leading into New York in 2016 and Chicago in 2017 when I went sub 3. So right there.
Ooh, okay.
I'm not anywhere near the A, grade level. So I kind of knew that going in. My mileage was down from those levels. I, you know, had peaked during those cycles around 100 miles. This go around, I peaked 75, right? So that immediately took me out of the A range into the Bs, possibly. And then I gave myself a C+. Let's start there. But my mileage was down. Like I said, I didn't do any speed work. And the reason I didn't is complete fear. I'm getting older.
Oh no.
I kind of knew that I could BQ, which the end goal here was to BQ with a buffer, right? So I can compete mm-hmm. next year in 2025. That was the end goal. So I figured, you know, if I do, you know, again, getting up to 75 miles, if I don't do any speed work and don't hurt myself, I'm going to be okay. And if I, those are the negatives, right? So I didn't obviously do speed work. The mileage was a little bit lower. And if there's a positive in the equation, it is that I did do a few races. I did a 16 mile race on some severe hills. That was really cool. Mm-hmm. I did a half marathon, which was encouraging.
Okay.
I did a 5K and I thought, and I went sub 20, like 19:30 something. I thought, okay, well, you know, my legs still have a little pep, even though I didn't do any speed work. So all in.
Isn't it surprising what you can maintain just by running a lot?
True. It is. But I will say this about why it's a C plus. I realize this in every race that I've run. I don't have a second gear. If you're not doing speed work, you can't change gears. You only have one gear.
Right.
So I think that is something that I want to focus on getting better at in the future. There's my answer. C plus.
Okay. Okay. Perfect. And now, so the second section is.
That's interesting. Your low mileage was my targeted high mileage. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. Your volume was still quite impressive, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. In miles, it's, 100 miles is like, wow. But even 75 is pretty up there. I mean,
yeah,
we tried.
I went from 50s to 60s to 75 and then tapered out of that. Yeah.
Okay. Before I go on to the next question, let me just convert that to kilometers. It's 120K. So that was like kind of what we tried to peak at last summer, Alan.
Yeah.
Yeah. So. But it was a lot. It was a lot. Like, you have to eat a lot of food to be able to sustain that mileage. Like, that's a challenge. So that brings us to the next section, which is fueling. But this is more fueling during the marathon. So what did you grade yourself, Alan? And also, can you tell us if you did any practice with your fueling?
How come
did
I
you have
always
a strategy?
How come I always have to go first?
Okay, fine. I can start with Mark.
Okay.
Mark, tell me about your fueling.
Yes.
So I want to know, so give your letter grade, but then I want to know, like, did you have a strategy? What was it? And did you practice it in training? Because I find that element of practice it in training is tough for me, at least.
Yep. So my fueling was a B. Wasn't a B minus or a B plus, just a flat B. You know, I'm pretty lackadaisical when it comes to race nutrition, quite frankly.
Okay.
It's just, you'd think I'd have something dialed in, but I don't. In fact, I just kind of wing it, quite frankly.
Okay.
And there's a few things here. Number one, I am really averse to anything that's sweet. So the Gatorade in and of itself can get me nauseous.
Mm-hmm.
So I need to be really careful about, beyond the Gatorade and the water that I'm taking in, what I put in my body, because I tend to get nauseous late in the race, and then I'm nauseous hours and hours and hours after the race. So that's not good. So that drags my score down. And then on the positive side, I was all excited leading up to the race because I cut out alcohol. I don't drink a ton, but I drink, you know, when I do, I drink bourbon. And I thought, if I don't drink bourbon this entire buildup, I'm going to be superhuman. Right. So I thought I'd have a cape in Hopkinton, and I didn't have a cape in Hopkinton. I'm a little disappointed in how that all played out, quite frankly. You know, after I think my last drink was December 20th. So, yeah. So I think, you know, food wise, leading up to the race, and as far as like carb loading and everything, I've got that. I have no issues with that. But a few of those things that I mentioned, including the really just not being as diligent about my nutrition within the race itself, dragged my score down to a B.
Okay, that's fair. I mean, I would say that compared to Alan on the alcohol front, I mean, you put in, your effort was A plus. So Alan, it's your turn. What'd you give yourself?
What do you mean compared to Alan on the alcohol front?
Did you give up beer?
Trying to tell the podcast world that I'm some sort of alcoholic.
No, Alan's really not. Like, he has one beer a week?
Yeah, normally I drink probably max sort of two craft beers a week. I'll sort of select my beers like people select wines. I go, okay, what beer am I going to drink this weekend? And so I just basically I cut those like two weeks beforehand, which maybe I'm a softer scorer than you. I give myself an A for fueling because I did that basically. But also I was able to think about what I was eating. I eat pretty well anyway. I've dialed up my protein a little bit. I was conscious to get good protein around the meals and do some extra carb loading, sort of gently leading up, and no sort of panic binge eating or like, let's go for a carb load 2 days before or 3 days before and stuff down something, you know, that is just entirely pasta, but it just blots you out for rest day. So I was going into a kind of rest day sort of feeling that I'd eaten well over a period leading up and tweaked it up a bit with extra carbs and some protein that I dialed down just before race day. So I was thinking, well, I've done a pretty good job. I'm not feeling like I'm carrying extra kilos going into the race line, but I feel like I've been, you know, well fueled and well rested. So I gave myself an A for fueling. The only reason I didn't give myself an A plus is I didn't practice with Molten at all. I've used Molten before, so I knew it wasn't going to be an extreme issue, but I didn't do getting practiced with Molten gels, which were the gels of choice by the Boston Marathon. And really, the reason I didn't practice is I can't afford it. Those darn things cost a fortune. If anybody from Molten is listening to this podcast, we could use a sponsorship so that we could practice a bit more and dial in our gel nutrition. Those things are just too costly. And probably one small thing that people might not know is Liz and I live in Quebec province in Canada, in Montreal. And currently you can't get Molten with caffeine.
Yeah, because it's very sad. We used to be able to.
There's some kind of state regulation that they haven't put something on their packaging or something, and
I think so. From what I heard,
too much caffeine, or
yeah, I think it's too much caffeine because they have 100 milligrams, and I think you need to have like an application with Health Canada if you have that much caffeine in a product.
So we only got the Molten with caffeine. We only get those if we can smuggle them in over the border. Pay one of our marathon friends to mule them across the border.
Which we have done. We have done that.
Which we have done, yes.
I mean, desperate times, right?
So lack of practice with Molten due to water controls in Quebec province and basically poor finances. So otherwise I would have rated myself up a little bit more. I felt pretty well fueled, and I would say I fueled myself on the run pretty well too. And what was nice, what I did was I went in with some Moltons. I took them at the agreed periods, which is about every 6K. I actually extended out a little bit. I took them well. I took them in increments. So I didn't take like a whole gel. I took half a gel and then I'd take maybe half of the rest and then half. So I'd take it a while to get it down.
Okay.
Which I think worked well. And what I did then was when I went through the fuel stations where they had Molten gels available, I took a gel and put it back in my pocket. So I finished with the same number of gels that I started with. So that was excellent. It was a cost neutral fueling strategy. Really cool.
I love it.
Oh, that
Thank
was
you,
smart.
Boston Marathon, and thank you, Morton.
I'd like to say one thing. I'll help your Morton sponsorship here. I never really used them at all, but I did get buy some at the expo because again I'm lackadaisical about this thing, and I ended up using them, and then of course using ones that were handed out of the course too, and I kind of loved them. Like they weren't sweet, right? It
Yes.
tasted
They're pretty good.
very, very almost like gelatinous, but
Yeah.
it
Kind of
kind
like jello, like flavorless jello
yeah, they're
almost.
like
Yeah.
jello
Yeah.
shots.
Yeah. They're
Yeah,
less,
so hey, make
they're
that
not
sponsorship
sticky.
happen.
Yeah. Yeah, they're not sticky like the goo. Like I'm guessing goo is the one that you'll probably like least because that's really sweet. But
Ooh, no.
yeah, and flavored.
Number.
Okay. Okay, so next on the report card is physical health. So I guess this is both like before and during. So we'll start with Alan because I started with Mark the last time. So now
Okay,
it's your
cool.
turn, Alan.
Yeah, physical health. I gave myself a B. I've had a slight knee twinge
Okay.
going in, but I've been able to manage that because I've had exercises from my physio. So when it comes on, I can usually manage it down. And it made my right leg a bit sore during the whole race. And I think being conscious of that, it's got to be a little tougher on you because it's wearing if you're just aware of it. But having said that, I don't think it really hampered me in terms of got worse or anything. In fact, after about 30 something K, so after about, I don't know, 18 miles, it got much better because everything just goes numb, no sense, no feeling at that point. So you just, I guess that's probably the endorphins kicking in or whatever. It's not endorphins. We did a course on this. It's not endorphins that kicks in. It's natural endocannabinoids
Cannabinoids.
that kick in. So I think that helped. So
Was scientific.
all pain goes away at that point. I would say I had the normal taper wobbles as well. For anybody who has done a marathon, they know what I'm talking about. And if you haven't done a marathon, what happens is when you get into taper, you're suddenly not running as much as you are used to running, and things surface. I don't know whether you find this, Mark, but Liz and I both find this. Suddenly you go, oh, I'm not sure if my left toe is really performing the way it's supposed to. Oh, and I got this pain
Yeah.
in my piriformis. It seems to be appearing. And these are all just ghost pre-marathon injuries. I call them kind of taper wobbles.
Yeah.
Like things, and you start the conversation between people who are doing marathons is, oh, how are you feeling? Oh, well, not so brilliant. There's always some sort of feeble, pathetic thing that you want to talk about that's suddenly come to the fore. And I had that. That was normal. So I guess I'm old enough now that I know that's going to happen and I ignore it. So
Okay.
that was about it. I didn't really develop any injuries.
Did you continue the
Except,
physio exercises even when your knee pain went away?
no, I just wait till it comes back, then I start the exercises again. That's how physio works. Everybody knows that.
It's just for
That's
the
how
record,
physio
you.
works. You
Yeah.
do some physio, your pain
It's
goes
not
away, you stop the
rehabilitation.
exercises. Yeah. It's
I
rehabilitation.
know.
So yeah, I would say I did have one little thing, and my big toe on the right hand side seems to have developed quite a bit of soreness after the race, and I think that's my shoe choice.
What did you run in?
I ran in the Saucony Endorphin Elite. And as you know, Liz, they have a very aggressive toe off.
Yes. Yeah, they do.
But I've run a marathon in them before, but not the Boston Marathon, which is a bit of a different prospect. We ran a nice, gentle, downhilly, consistent marathon in them last year. So I think it's the shoe choice. I'm dialing. I'm going to dial it out for the next marathon. I think I'm going to get another shoe to try.
Oh, okay. Well, all the money you saved on Morton during the race, now you can spend it on shoes. Okay. It's Mark's turn now. So what did you grade yourself, and why? And were you healthy leading up to the race and through your training cycle and during the race?
Okay, so I gave myself for physical health a B minus, and I do want to say that people that are listening in,
I think you grade yourself a lot harder than Alan does.
a little bit harder.
Maybe.
But people listening might say, wait a minute, didn't we just do fitness and physical health? Aren't they the same thing? And my answer is no. In the book, I kind of outline why, but I'll give you an example. When I was in Chicago and ran my PR, I had got up, as I just said, to 100 mile weeks, and my fitness was fantastic, but I was a hot mess at the starting line. I
Okay.
really had what I thought was like a broken plantar plate or a stress fracture. My feet were all really
Oh
hobbled.
no.
And then I had a shin issue right at the start that lasted a few miles. So I was really, fitness-wise, again, an A in that case, and my physical health was more like a C.
Oh
And
boy.
that's
You
how
were
that really played out.
just keeping it together.
Yeah, but let's get
Just
back to Boston. Yeah, sorry about
okay.
that. But I wanted to explain the difference between fitness and physical health. So
Yeah,
my physical
fine.
health at Boston was a B minus, and I do have some I just mentioned my feet. I have overuse foot trauma that just follows me around.
Oh
And
no.
I still have it in different areas of my feet. Speaking of toes, my big toe on my left foot, Alan, is what they call hallux rigidus. It doesn't move. So it's hard to toe off. And I love what you said about the endorphin Saucony elites. I tried them on at the store, and man, oh man, they really do propel you forward.
You certainly do.
I ended up going with the Saucony Endorphin Pro 4s. And the only reason I did that is because they felt more comfortable, and I was concerned about my toe. So,
Okay.
anyway, I know
I
we're
have a
talking a lot.
question. I have a question because I had a training partner with that same issue. Do you find, so the carbon shoes weren't out back then. Do you find that it's better with the carbon plated shoe because it's more stiff and so like your toe doesn't really bend anyway, or is it worse because of the same reason? Like, how does it?
I would say that's a good question. I'd say it's definitely better with the carbon
Okay.
plate for sure, but I think some carbon plated shoes are better than others. And I will
Okay.
say, because of that toe, no matter what shoe I'm wearing, carbon or otherwise, I do some hokey things with that left foot when it strikes the ground. If I had that in slow motion, I would love to see what the heck goes on. But I think I do some twisting things that aren't, I wouldn't advise anybody do. But it works, right? There are other muscles you use, and you end up figuring out how to land and propel yourself without engaging that toe. But I think some carbon-plated shoes are better than others for sure. But getting back to, so I also have a hip impingement, which if I'm running long distances, which obviously a marathon is, and I'm doing some heavier training, it tends to flare up, and it's a concern in longer long runs. It's a concern in races. So I was
Okay.
feeling some pain during the race. I was feeling some pain in long runs leading up to the race. And the whole time I'm thinking to myself, how's this gonna play out on April 15th? And the answer is it did actually work out okay. I felt it here and there, but it wasn't this massive problem that I had to triage in the moment. I just kind of got through it. The positives on physical health, and the reason it's a B minus and not in the C range, is because I went back into the weight room, and I used to lift like a maniac long ago. I got back in the weight room over the past year, and it's been fantastic. So I must say, I am definitely a stronger runner than I've ever been. And I can, when things like I told you, I didn't do speed work and things like that, I can actually rely on my strength now, and my core strength, and also overall strength in ways that I couldn't before. So that brought my C plus up to a B minus.
Okay, and that's actually I guess a good testament for doing strength work. I mean, for people that are not really convinced that they should, I know that runners
Do you follow
generally
any?
hate hates speed strength work, but
Do you
it
follow
can
any
really benefit.
particular program, or do you build your own program, or do you have a coach, or what do you do, Mark?
I love your question, Alan. I love where your heart's at. The reality is I've fallen into some old habits of just kind of doing a lot of upper body work and not a lot of work with my lower body. So I'm trying to find a way where running and lifting for me can play well together. And I haven't completely married them yet. I'm getting there and I'm really committed to getting there. But I must say that what I'm doing in the weight room is somewhat working against what I'm doing when I'm out on the roads running, which is imperfect. But what I have been doing has helped nonetheless. So that's not a great answer, but that's the answer right now.
Okay, that's fair. That's fair. Moving on to a very important topic, mental health. So that's category number four. Because we all know that if you're running a marathon, if you're not in it mentally, then a lot of times you'll leave performance on the table. So starting, Mark will give you the floor first, because otherwise Alan's gonna probably say everything you want to say. So what did you grade yourself, and I guess why?
Okay, mental health, an A minus is my only A on my report card. Really happy about that. But here's why.
There's
Here's
a
why.
minus after it. Like, you could have just given yourself a straight A,
I
no?
know, but you know why? I'll tell you why. Because when I
You're like
was,
that teacher that will never give a perfect grade. Are you like one of those?
I am
Yeah.
absolutely that teacher for sure.
Okay. Alan is like the one that curves the grades at the end so that somebody gets an A plus.
Yeah. I make the analogy that, when you go trick-or-treating and you hand out candy bars to all the kids, right? There is that one house where they only hand it out to the best costumed kids, and they give them a larger candy bar.
That's
I'm
your
that one.
house.
I'm that house.
Okay.
Exactly. But anyway, so the reason it wasn't an A and it wasn't A minus is because I'm not, I told you I did run some races, but I'm not race hardened. And I don't think, I know that Boston as a marathon requires a mental fortitude that you don't need at a flatter marathon, period. You just do. You need to be completely locked in. So that slid it down to an A minus. The positives were that the book came out February 6th. I was on this absolute high the entire week. I was sharing the book with runners and readers. I was at the expo. I was doing all kinds of events. Literally, I was euphoric, right? So mentally, I was in a really great headspace. And despite my lack of fitness, which I told you earlier, I was at the starting line, and I know after running 19 now that I have to fight for every second, and I was ready to fight. So I was euphoric. I was ready to fight, but I wasn't quite race hardened. Hence, A minus.
Okay, well, I guess that's fair. That's fair. But I think that the positivity and being euphoric, that probably gets you a lot, even in Boston. Yeah. Okay, Alan, your turn. What
Well,
did you grade
I actually
yourself?
graded myself A minus as well, but for some different reasons. I guess at Boston, I wasn't, look, you knew that I wasn't going there to, and I wasn't trained to go there to kind of bet all the marbles, to kind of throw down and go for it. So I knew I wasn't going to do that, and I thought I was prepared enough for what I was there to do. So where you said, I was euphoric and I was there ready to fight. I would say I was euphoric because of Boston. I haven't been there for 5 years. So I saw a nice sunny Boston with all the runners, and it just lifts you up. And one of the things I did that I've never done before is I took a shakeout run the day before in the city. I did the Tracksmith run, and that was such fun. And then I went off to New Balance headquarters, and Mark Coogan, the head coach of New Balance Elite, gave me a private tour of the research labs there. So me and my buddies were just pumped through that. And
That's amazing.
whereas you said you're ready to fight, Mark, I would say I came a bit more like a Zen warrior. I was ready to flow. So
Ah.
I was kind of zoned in. Okay, I know what's going to happen here. I've had the lowdown from Mark's book, chapter and verse on the Boston Marathon. I've done it so many times. I know where I'm going to make the mistake. I'm going to make the mistake in the first 5 miles, and I will have problems based on what I do in the first 5 miles. So I was in the last corral of the first wave. So I was right at the end of the starting wave. The wave went off. I walked up the hill to get to the start line, started a nice, easy jog past the start. Everybody went bam as they hit the start, and their adrenaline kicks over. And I go, no, okay, I'm just going to run the pace that I said I was going to run at. And I said I would run at a 4:30 pace to start with. That's 4 minutes 30 per kilometer, which averages out at a target 3:10,
And
I think, 3:10 pace. But I know that I won't be able to maintain that all the way through. So I know that I'm not going to do 3:10. I'm going to target somewhere around 3:15, something like that. But I'm going to go off at 4:30 pace. And 4:30, 4:30. They were pretty well dialed in. Maybe there were a couple of quick ones when we got on the real steep downhills. But I was like zened in. So I was pretty proud of that because it got problematic with the heat for me afterwards, and I was able to cope with it because of what I'd done in the first half.
So actually, let's talk about the heat because I'm gonna interrupt
Well, no,
your
meteorology
whole.
is the next thing, so you can get
Yes, I
straight
know,
into it
but
if you
yes,
want.
that's true. That's true. But before you give it a grading, so because I only did one Boston, I did 2011, and in the book I read that that was perfect weather, and I remember it being pretty perfect weather. Like I remember it being sunny and not too cold because I was wearing shorts, and I don't wear shorts in the spring until like really late normally. So me wearing shorts means it was like warm enough for that. And
And
I
and
remember
the
something
elite
about a tailwind.
the
Like
elite
I.
runners run, if I remember rightly, the elite runners run a best ever Boston in 2011.
Correct.
Yeah.
Jeffrey Mutai ran 203.
So comparing the weather, so like when I was looking at the weather you guys were gonna have, I was like, oh, that seems like it's gonna be good comparable to the year that I did it. But was it?
I thought that as well. It looked like
Okay.
we're going to have a following wind, and we're going to have a coolish day. And I had the benefit of being in the first wave, so I was going to get off before it got warm up. So I was thinking, I have a saying around this, and the saying is, the weather is perfect, the training has gone well, God has removed all your excuses. Which means, basically, yeah, all the things you're going to blame your failure on, they're not there. So now you've got to
Okay.
perform. But it didn't quite work out that way. I would say the term that I used was deceptively hot, because nobody was anticipating it to be hot. And in fact, when I went for the shakeout run the morning before, it was sort of, there was a light chill in the air almost early in the morning the day before. And I think there was just so much sun, no shade. And I heard a theory as well, that there was a slight wind pushing you in the back, but it was so slight, it was about the same speed as the speed that you run at. So in fact, when you're running, the air feels perfectly still. So you've got no air movement around you. It's just, you're sitting in the same piece of air all the time, which means heating up, you heat up quicker. There was all sorts of numbers on the weather reports. But I was running, one of the friends that I was running with, he has one of those foot pods. I think they're Stride foot pods, and it measures real life temperature in the air just above your foot there in the moment. And he was getting numbers. We looked at his chart afterwards, and he was getting numbers that were 24C, 26C, up to 28C. So he was getting, I don't know, what's that in Fahrenheit? That's like in the 70s?
Let me find a conversion.
High 70s.
28 Celsius.
28 would be the peak, but there are quite a few 26s. Yeah, so 82. High 70s is probably. And that is a problem for me once I get into the Newton Hills. But I was dialed in pretty well.
Letter grade would you give the weather? I guess
I gave it a B.
Oh, that's still pretty good.
I might have given it like a C plus or a B minus, but.
So what would you have graded 2018 with the year that you finished with the garbage bag still over your clothes?
D.
You know, just for reference.
D.
Oh, okay, that's
probably.
A D.
Yeah.
Oh,
if there was actually
wasn't
flowing,
an F? You don't think it was an
hot,
F?
If there was actually hot flowing lava or something like that,
mm-hmm.
or an actual tornado.
Okay.
You know?
Oh, that's what you would categorize an F. So it has to be like pretty extreme, because I would say like, I don't know, I didn't go in 2018, but I would think that would be like an F minus, like would be my rating.
I think everybody was expecting it to be wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at some of the YouTubers who did the run, and you look at that, they're nearly all crashed and burned towards the end. I watched a couple, Ben Parks, if you know the guy from the UK.
Yeah.
He runs 2:45. He did 3:02. And he had to go to the med tent at the end. So he's videoing himself and then saying, okay, here I am coming out of the med tent. And Ben Bridges, This Messy Happy, another UK guy that I follow. He also had to hustle to get under 3 hours, and normally he's a 2:50 guy, 2:40 guy. So there were a lot of people, I think, who did slower times than they would have ideally anticipated, and I would say I was one of those. You know, I did 3:07 last year with you when you did your 3:06, Liz.
Mm-hmm.
I did 3:19 at Boston, and I had to hustle to get under the 3:20 at the end, just so I could say I was under 3:20.
Okay.
But the slowdown in the second half, in the heat, I think I managed it well. I had a hat, I had a cap on, and I just took the water stations were fantastic. They were fueling stations, Gatorade and water. I think they were every mile, like they were just coming up so frequently.
Yeah, I remember them being pretty frequent.
You could just grab a water and dump it on your head, and your head would still be damp when you got to the next station, and that helped a lot to stave off heat stroke. But if you look at my heart rate graph, actually, I think I published it on Facebook. I never normally follow my heart rate. Sorry, I'm waffling on here. I never normally follow my heart rate at all. But one of my friends who saw it on Strava, he said, have a look at your heart rate, Alan. It tells the whole story. Mm. My heart rate's under control. And then I get into the Newton Hills and it starts to go up, which is normal.
Mm-hmm.
And what you expect is you get over get over heartbreak, get your heart rate down a little bit under control, and then compete, as Mark tells us. Fourth one, compete. But my heart rate I got down off the hill, and my heart rate just kept going up. It was just going up and up and up. And so it just kind of goes flat and curves away into oblivion.
Yeah. Okay. So too hot for you. But what about you, Mark? So what letter grade did you give the weather? And I guess you have a lot of years to compare it to. but
I do. So I gave, okay, so meteorology, it's not only the conditions on the day, right? But it's also how did you anticipate them? And then how did you manage them during the course of the race, right? So my meteorology grade was a B+. The negatives were, you know, like Alan said, earlier in the week, it looked almost to be a perfect day, right? But for me even, and I'm a fantastic weather stalker. Fantastic. Okay. I mean, I don't mess around when I'm stalking the weather. So I kind of knew it was getting a little warmer and warmer. I thought that could be slightly negative. But even I and Alan, I think we had a similar race in this regard. I was actually fine in Wellesley. There have been many Bostons where I have not felt very good at Wellesley, and I knew it was going to be a bad day. I felt pretty great in Wellesley. I hit my half in 1:39. My goal was to go sub 3:20. I was right on track, feeling good. And then I got to the Newton Hills, and I was shifting into my third C, which is control, my effort.
Mm-hmm.
And here's where things got a little off the rails. I was controlling my effort, no doubt. But when I've done that in the past, I've been able to maintain a decent pace. And I was really feeling beat up. And that really was the heat that all of a sudden was getting to me. To Alan's point, you know, you never felt the wind. I remember there was one point I felt the wind, and that was probably around mile 25 or 24 in Coolidge Corner when the wind shifted and we were getting it from the side. And I was like, oh, that's delightful. But I hadn't felt it the entire race. And I knew things were rough, and I knew things were not good for a lot of other people because there were people that were beginning to walk. And then right around mile 19 by the Johnny Kelly statue, I actually ended up passing Gene Dykes. Do you know Gene Dykes?
I've heard of him. He's like the record holder for the marathon in his age category, I think, right?
Yeah, 70
in
plus.
He is
amazing.
He's been
runs
in some
free at age 77. Yeah.
Which is impressive. That's crazy. Yeah.
He's incredible. So I knew when I was passing him that this is just not a bad day for Mark. This is a bad day for a lot of people. And man, oh man, you know, I was not moving very quickly up the Newton Hills, but I was passing a lot of people, which, yeah. And then, you know, the thing about the weather and where all these other Bostons that I've run have come in handy is I kind of knew what I was getting myself into, and I just adjusted accordingly. So I knew it wasn't my day anymore. I knew 3:20 was out the door. And when I was getting up to the top of Heartbreak Hill, I truly did kind of regroup. Now, I thought that I would get right back to my goal pace and be at least 7:45-ish. That never happened. So I was still hovering around 8. And I was like, oh man, I can't compete the way I'd really, really like to. And I was just trying to not blow up because I figured I can get in and still get a 10-minute buffer and BQ. And I should just aim for that because I didn't want to take a risk that could really affect me. Because if I took a risk and tried to run a little bit faster, then maybe I would have blown up. That would put me in a weird position. And I'm still in a weird position. We can talk about that in a second. I don't know whether my 9:53 buffer is going to hold up. I'm hoping it will. I mean, Alan, you're in great shape. I don't know. I mean, there's a few scenarios where, you know, it's not going to work for me. But you know, the one thing I will say with the meteorology also, I did do two things that were fantastic for me. I always carry a sponge. I talk about the importance of carrying a sponge in the book. And that sponge, man, oh, man, came in handy.
Was that a sponge you picked up during the marathon? Because I think they give them out at one point. Because I remember carrying a sponge, and I definitely didn't bring it. It was given to me by
stations.
No, there were people handing out sponges, but I brought 4 to Hopkinton with me, and I was passing them out to people.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So I had my sponge from the get-go.
Okay.
The second thing that saved me were Otter Pops, those freeze pops. Kids were handing out Otter Pops.
Yes.
I probably had 5 or 6 Otter Pops on the way.
Oh, wow.
And those were golden because it just chills you in a way, I guess, internally, and it corrects your overheatedness in a way that lukewarm Gatorade does not, right?
Yeah, and also, like, you get some carbs, you know, the whole sweet thing. I guess it goes down better when it's cold and sweet than when it's warm and sweet.
It sends a message to your brain that you're cooling down, whether you are or not, because you're the inside of your mouth is cold. So your brain gets a message that you're cooling down, so it allows you to run a little bit faster. It's like a central controller thing.
Yes. Yeah. So I, again, meteorology, B+. Maybe we could talk about our overall GPA and how that all played out.
Yeah.
Next.
Yeah. Well,
Alan's GPA seems to be like one of those Dean lists GPAs. So I don't know. But you said in your book that we shouldn't always be on the Dean's list, but I think Alan's put himself there.
I said my overall GPA was a 3.3 or a B+. I think, you know, you could say my grades were slightly up from with respect to marks, but I think I'm doing quite a good job of being an ultra realist. So you can err on both sides of being not realistic with yourself. You can say, I really wasn't that good, or I wasn't in that good shape when in fact you were. Or you can say, I'm in fantastic shape when you're not. So it kind of goes both ways, and you've got to get into the middle zone. And I think I know myself quite well and can auto-correct myself when I'm dialing it down falsely. So I don't think my choices are that bad. Interestingly, when you were talking about just one thing that might interest anybody who's done Boston, when you're talking about your time for Boston, and you go, not as good as my usual times. One useful thing that you can do with respect to Boston, and I don't know if this is in your book or not, is you can see what number you finished at versus the number on your bib. Which you can never do it anywhere else, because Boston basically lines you up in order. So if everybody in Boston runs at their qualifying time, they'll finish in bib numerical order, because that's the way they're giving their bibs. So one of the things we did was said, okay, well, what position did I come? 7,300 and something. And what's my bib number? 7,500 and something. Okay, I had a good day. Whether you kind of felt that you could have run faster, or should have run faster, or have a faster PR, you had a better day than 200 other people. So, you know, you moved up. And I guess similarly, if you move backwards, well, maybe you had a bad day at the office.
Love it. That is, so my overall GPA was a flat B, 3.0.
Okay, not quite Dean's list, but like not far off. So
that's pretty good. You know,
it's pretty good.
I've got high hopes for next year. But this was solid. It was a solid B. I'm happy with it. I mean, to Alan's point, that is really, I do mention it in the book, by the way. Mm-hmm. You know, my bib number was 14,419, and I finished in 82.12. So, you know, by those, you know, if you look at that metric, then it's a huge success, right?
Fantastic performance.
Right. And, you know, another way to do it, I always say, is go look at your race photos. And at every point in the course where you have a photo, look at the bibs around you. Are they, you know,
what numbers are they?
If you see a lot of 10,000 bibs and you're in the 14 range and you're doing pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
Conversely, if you get to the finish line and those what used to be 10 and Natick is now, you know, something that's closer to 17 and 18,000, and you're wearing a 14,000 on your chest, that's a problem.
You crashed.
Right?
Yeah.
So you can tell at every moment in the course kind of how your day unfolded like that. But yeah, I 325, is not, you know, I think, again, it gets back to taking risks and being mentally tough. Boston requires that of you. I was mentally tough, but, you know, could I have been a little bit tougher when I needed it, especially in the last 5 miles? Absolutely. So when I look back on the race, I'm happy, but at the same time, I also kind of know that I just wasn't as in it as I could have been. And that might have put me, you know, in the 3:23 range, which would have given me a 12-minute buffer, which would make me feel a little bit more comfortable, because the BAA could, you know, change obviously the standards. Mm-hmm. And they could change it by 5 minutes. They could change it by 10 minutes. If they change it by 10 minutes, I'm out of luck. If they change it by five, yeah, and the buffer's five, I'm out of luck. So, you know, will they leave them alone through September and then just do everything in 2026? Well, the BAA typically does do that. They should, you know, because of all these runners like me who are in this weird place, they would far rather just have an entire year where everything has changed, right? So, but to my point earlier, they could just make that call because they can do it, right? So we'll see. But I wish I felt a little less uneasy.
Okay. Yeah.
And I would if I had a 12-minute buffer instead of a 9:53.
I don't know. I find like a 9-minute buffer is huge. I mean, granted, I think the last application process, it was like the biggest, you needed the biggest buffer ever. And it was like over 5 minutes, almost 6 minutes or something like that, I think.
It's been as bad as 1 year it was over seven. Last year, yeah, it was 5:29.
Yeah.
But 11,000 people were left out.
Yeah.
A 9-minute buffer has never not gotten you in.
Yeah.
But there's always a first time.
I know, right, there's exactly always a first time, except that, I don't know, I think that since it hasn't happened yet, and like, I mean, you know, could, I mean, that's several minutes over what the worst case scenario has been up until now. So I don't know. I think that you're pretty good to get in. Are there any like plans for you to, what, like, if ever they announce that they're, you know, changing the time or anything, are there any plans for you to do another marathon this year before registration time?
If they were to change it, and I happened to be in that weird place where I thought it wouldn't work out, I absolutely would find a fall race. Yes.
Okay.
I haven't picked that race yet. I imagine I would probably heed the advice of my book and go out west and run down a mountain.
Mm-hmm.
I think, yep, I haven't done that yet. And if there's ever a time, this might be that time. So it's really difficult. It's funny. It's really difficult for me. I know a lot of people ran Boston and then a week later they ran London. And I just look at these people, I'm thinking, how can you do that? My body's wrecked.
I know. Yeah. Mm. I can't do it either. Like if I run a marathon, I think I'm wrecked for 2 months after. Like I could barely do intervals on the track. Like it's crazy. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. And I have had years where I've run two, one in the fall, one in the spring.
Mm-hmm.
But even if I don't have to do that, I would prefer not to do that now.
Yeah.
But I would go there if need be.
Okay. Okay. That's fair. Hopefully you won't need to. And then, you know, you did say, both of you said what your times ended up being. Alan, you were 3:19 and you, Mark, had a 3:26. 3:25.07. Okay. So
you couldn't run air chickens quicker to get under the 3:25, Mark?
I was on Boylston Street doing some really fuzzy, wonky math in my head.
Yeah.
And I was going pretty good. And then I got to a point and I was like, oh, this is not going to happen. My math is wrong. And then I took my foot off the accelerator and just coasted in. But I don't know. I wouldn't have done it because I would have had to, again, getting back to my point, I would have had to have really, you know, leaned into the pain in Kenmore Square in a way that I didn't.
Yeah.
So okay. That's one of my regrets.
No, you just sprint down Boylston.
I did sprint down Boylston.
Oh, you had that.
He already sprinted down.
Already done that.
Yeah.
My time was 3:19:57. So I had 3 seconds to spare. I was absolutely sprinting, trying to sprint down the last bit of Boylston with my legs cramping. I looked a real mess, but I got in.
Yeah. Those race photos must be great because you see Alan just running along for the whole entire marathon, and then you see him like this at the end, with his arms pumping and his knees. So what were you expect? Like, what did you think you were going to run going in, Alan? So you ran 3:19, but what did you think you were going to run?
Yeah, I said at the start I was going to target 3:15.
3:15. Yeah. Okay. And Mark,
and I set off at a pace which was about 3:10 because I figured it's a positive split race. Mm. You know, basically just the second half is harder terrain wise. So then I know Mark will tell me that it's an absolute dream for a runner once you get down off the Newton Hills and you've done Heartbreak that, you know, the race is an absolute pearl. But I don't kind of, I still haven't experienced that. And I've had 7 goes.
And Mark, what were you targeting before you went in? Like, what did you think you were going to run?
So I was, again, hoping to get sub 3:20. And 2 years ago, I ran 3:22. And for the first time ever, I negative split the course. The only time.
Wow.
I actually negative split Boston. Last year.
That's quite the accomplishment. Negative split Boston.
Yeah. I'm literally.
I don't know anybody that's ever told me that they've negative split in Boston.
1 for 19. Not a good success rate.
Yeah.
But last year I ran 3:20 and I felt that I was in the exact kind of shape, or at least slightly better shape than I was last year.
Okay.
So to be able to pull off the sub 3:20. But I will say that the C's that the 4 C's that Alan referred to, you know, it's kind of like if you think of the 4 C's of a diamond, if you're familiar with diamonds, right? So you have carat, cut, color, and clarity. And you're never going to find the perfect diamond, right? There's something that's going to be flawed in some way. The cut's going to be wrong. There's going to be some type of imperfection, right? The 4 C's of Boston, which are conserve, cruise, control, and then compete, they're never going to be perfect either. So when I look back on this year's race, I think to myself that I did kind of pull off each of those C's pretty decently, but the last two, the control, where I really dialed it back and I really stepped off the accelerator in a way that I probably didn't need to. And then the compete stage, I just didn't just dig in and lean into the pain the way I would if I had a second chance to do it again.
Okay.
And that would have gotten me below the 3:25, maybe closer to 3:24, 23:23. So there are a few regrets, not many, but all in all, again, a solid B and happy.
Good.
Not quite as zen as Alan.
No, he seems pretty zen, actually, even talking about it. He has accepted everything that happened on race day already.
I think the thing that I've learned from this Boston versus the other Bostons is when you talk about your 4 C's, the most important one is the first one, is the conserve, because that's where you have all of the options at your disposal to get it wrong. On the control on the hills, maybe you've only got what you've got. So it's, you know, you just do what you can. But you have the ability to do much more at the start than probably you should. And that's where you're going to make the error that is going to spoil your race. Now, how much you should conserve is the $64,000 question.
I guess you only know once you get to those Newton Hills if you've done enough conserving or not enough conserving.
You know, the other saying that I use in marathon training, and it works well for this race, is you can't pull a plant up to check its roots to see how well it's growing.
Actually, I have a funny story about that.
Yeah, because, you know, and that's a bit like, I've done really good training, so I'll do a really hard session just before the marathon, just to prove that I've got the training in my legs. You know, you're killing yourself, and it's the same at the start of the Boston Marathon. You can't go, well, I'm super fit, so I'm just going to blast down these hills. I got the downhills. I can bank a lot of time. You have to bank the amount of time that you can legitimately get and still have strong legs coming up the Newton Hills, and you won't know what the answer is until it's too late.
So last story, and then I'll let you guys go. But my husband Andre, when he was a kid, he always tells a story. They were planting something in school, and his plant never grew. And his teacher later found out why. It's because every day he was digging up the seed to check if the roots were growing.
Oh, okay. So he actually did that. Okay.
That's why that was so funny.
Yeah. Why am I not surprised?
Oh my gosh. Don't dig up the plant to see if there's roots. Yeah, so that's the final question. Mark, I already know your answer, but are you gonna go back next year?
Oh yeah. So, well, you know, if I make it in, for sure, and I'll figure out a way. I will figure out a way to get in. So it will be my 20th, right?
Oh wow. That's
kind of a milestone.
Yeah,
kind of a milestone. So I feel compelled to do it. But I just, you know, I'm not done yet. I still have unfinished business. And I really do think that if I can keep healthy, that I can step up my training in a way that I didn't this year and run faster. And I've kind of coddled myself in my training, as I mentioned at the outset of this call.
Mm-hmm.
And I look back and I think to myself, yeah, you're really taking it too easy on yourself, Mark. You have it in you to run faster. You're just not believing it right now. And so if it comes to that and they change the standards, or I feel that I'm at risk, I'll just run a fall marathon, and then I'll take things a little bit more seriously next year. That's the plan.
Okay, that's fair. Alan, are you going back next year?
I've just put my application in for London.
No, I won't.
If there's anybody from the London Marathon who is giving entries to, I don't know, social media people who have podcasts, pick me. This will be the sixth or seventh year that I've been in the ballot. What I do is I go in the ballot and then I behave as if I've been rejected. So I plan other things around that. And so far I've been right. So I think the ballots are on now, and they'll be announced in before the Boston entries become, I think, required before September. Isn't it September when Boston entries mm-hmm. come up? So if I get rejected from London, and there is a 97% chance that I will get rejected.
How many goes have you had at that lottery, Alan?
This will be my seventh one, I think. So yeah. I actually need to have 30 before I can complain that I haven't come out of the hat. Anyone listening from the London Marathon, your system is pathetic. It really does not. It does not allow, you know, people who are decent overseas runners to find their way in, other than producing a lot of money or raising a lot of money for charity. It's really excluding runners, because saying, oh, we have a ballot and everybody can enter, it's a pathetic ballot. Your chances are tiny of coming out of the ballot. Absolutely tiny. As I said, once I've been doing it for 30 years and I don't come out, I can legitimately complain because it's useless. So assuming I get rejected, I think my next choice at this point in time would be to do Boston again. So I haven't done it for 5 years. I've just done it. I had such a good time. It was such fun. It was such a great experience. The whole weekend, you feel so special. doing it. I think I might like to have another go in 2025.
Okay.
What about
Yeah, I
you,
just want
Liz?
to add to that.
Yeah, sure. Go on.
I just want to add to that that it's easy to get down on ourselves and dissect our races like we're kind of doing right now. But one thing that I always do is I look back, at the week and obviously the race itself. And to Alan's point, the volunteers and the spectators and everything about that week just brings out the best in Boston. And I mentioned that I was euphoric because of the book. I was just really on a high the entire week leading into the race. And then even during the race itself, when things were going a little sideways, those volunteers were so amazing. And the spectators so amazing. I will say that I was pretty deep in the pain cave, and I had Marco written on my chest, but I had taped it on. And the tape, because of the obviously the heat and the sweating, was beginning to come off. So nobody could really tell what it was. And I really was hearing Marco all the time. And I was not in the right headspace to hear it. So they were cheering, but I was like, I was kind of over it. So I just ripped off the Marco and I was just, this anonymous runner the rest of the way, which is probably the right thing for me in the moment to do. Yeah, I just, it's easy to get down and think about everything that went wrong, but there's so much that went right, and it just trumps everything. The positive is just so positive. So that's one of the reasons why I keep coming back.
What about you,
Yeah.
Liz? You've got a qualifying time.
Yeah, I do. I don't know. We'll see. We'll
I
see.
get the wrong thing.
Yeah. I kind of for a while I was refusing to do spring marathons just in general because like we have to train through the bad weather and the bad footing and the snow and everything. And you get to the marathon and you end up with like a not so great time, compared to what you want to do or what you expect or what you think you're training for. And it's always been so disappointing that like I don't know, there've been a few years I've refused to do spring marathons altogether. And I find Boston is it's like particularly early, but yet still late enough that like you could get the day that's 20 degrees Celsius, not Fahrenheit. That's kind of why I've been sort of avoiding it, but maybe I'll go. We'll see.
We'd love to have you back, Liz.
Yeah, I keep saying I need a do-over because like 2011, it was a bit of a disappointment. I ended up running like much slower than my qualifier, like by more than 20 minutes. Than the time I qualified with. So I would have been ranked like all the way, back in, I don't remember what number I had, but I had like a 4-digit number, which I remember people telling me like it's so good, but I didn't really understand it at the time. And like I definitely finished with the 5-digit numbers at the end. yeah.
Sounds like you have some unfinished business.
Yeah, I definitely do. I definitely do. So I guess we'll end it there and just say thank you, Mark. Thanks for proposing the format for this bonus episode and for coming on, because usually we do bonus episodes on our own. So this has been really, really fun.
Yeah, we really
Thank you so much.
appreciate
I
it.
love you guys. Would love to come back next year and do it all over again. So thanks for having me.
Perfect.
And thanks for spreading the good word about the book, but really appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah, if people haven't gotten on to this yet, you can go back and listen to the previous episode. But Mark is the author of a book called The Boston Marathon Handbook, an insider's guide to training for and succeeding in the ultimate road race, which is Boston. And highly recommended from the guys here. We can't show it because my blurring
Yeah,
system
your
doesn't
screen
show
blur.
it, but
Anyway, I don't think we usually do anything with the video, but just in
yeah.
case, here it is. And the race report card is on page, in case people already have the book. That's on
114.
page 114.
And if you are thinking about doing Boston, it's a must read. if you have done Boston and would like to understand more about what you've really just achieved and the history of it, it's a must read. And if you have ever have any ambitions to run any kind of marathon, you should read this book about Boston. Because you will then have ambitions to do a marathon straight away and get a qualifying time.
Perfect. Bye for now.
That's all from us.